Now, they didn't have problems with the kings of France over all of that period, but they had lots of other problems. Problems in Italy, where after they'd been absent for a little while, they were no longer entirely welcome to return. Problems because the papal states were collapsing, and therefore the popes didn't have adequate sources of revenue. And partly because as the Hundred Years' War broke out, the popes did honestly try to function as honest brokers in this war, though not surprisingly, the English thought the popes favored the French thought the popes favored the English. Other people divided up badly in allegiance. Indeed, much of Europe split right down the middle between how they viewed the popes at Avignon and how they viewed, eventually, as we'll see in a moment, their rivals. Now, the absence of the popes from Rome scandalized many. Writers like, for example, Catherine of Siena and the early humanist Petrarch spoke of the Babylonian captivity of the church, referring to the Babylonian captivity of the Jews in antiquity. Now, attempts to restore the popes to Rome resulted in the Great Schism. A group of cardinals returned to Rome in 1378, elected the Archbishop of Bari as pope, and then immediately a group of French cardinals, remember the popes had been in France now for three quarters of a century, a group of French cardinals returned to France and elected a different man pope. There are now two popes. There is a schism. There is a split in the church. And Europe's allegiances were divided. Remember, this is during the Hundred Years' War. Now, between 1378 and 1417, there were sometimes two and sometimes three men, each claiming to be the legitimate pope. Slowly but surely, scholars at the University of Paris began to work out a doctrine which we call conciliarism, a doctrine that claimed that ultimate authority in the church resided in the councils, conciliarism, and not in the popes itself. Here was an affront to the notion of papal monarchy that had grown with such vigor and vitality in 12th and 13th century Europe. Some churchmen called for frequent councils, while the popes, of course, gradually tried to subvert them. The popes didn't want these councils being called and telling them what to do. Now, eventually, in 1417, one of these councils, that at Constance, put an end to the Great Schism. But the prestige, the reputation, the credibility of the papacy had been damaged. Now, challenges for the official church do not necessarily bespeak a decline of religious sentiment. Writers like Chaucer, for example, were humorously anti-clerical. Some of the religious figures in his stories have become stock-in-trade figures for bad members of the clergy. But Chaucer, if one reads him carefully, is by no means an irreligious or an anti-religious author. He is indeed, in many respects, anti-clerical, but conventionally pious. There was a very broad movement in 14th and 15th century Europe, which we call the modern devotion. Now, it arose in the first place in the Netherlands, and it then began to spread to almost every corner of Europe. This was groups of lay people, sometimes living together in villages or in communities within towns, who began to live together, to eat together on certain occasions, to pray together on certain occasions. In other words, lay people functioning out in the world and taking on some of the characteristics of a monastic community called the Brethren of the Common Life. Brethren, brothers who lived a common life. And there were sisters of the common life as well. Now, this was also a world that produced sort of spiritual bestsellers of the late Middle Ages, like Thomas A. Kempis's Imitation of Christ, one of the most frequently copied and then printed books in all of history. The idea here was that ordinary people could be given a series of reflections on the way Jesus had lived his life and that they, too, could then imitate the life of Christ. Now, this was a movement obviously existing parallel with the church. It wasn't in opposition to it, but it was certainly not one inspired by it. There were large-scale heretical movements that challenged both the authority of the church and particular teachings of the church. The Lollards in England, for example, who took their rise from the scholar John Wycliffe, who taught at Oxford University in the 14th century, and the Hussites in Bohemia, who took their inspiration from Jan Hus, who taught in Prague in the late 14th and early 15th centuries. Now, we'll meet both of those figures again in a later lecture. Suffice it to say for now, there were people who challenged both the authority of the church and some of its teachings. Records tell us of huge numbers of pilgrims. And it's interesting, after all, isn't it, that Chaucer's Canterbury Tales is a series of stories allegedly told to one another by pilgrims on their way to the shrine of Thomas Becket at Canterbury.